Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
It is Friday, Raider Nation. Welcome back to the Silver and Black Today, powered by Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys. Call them anytime, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. No question about that. You can also visit them at salmonash.com. All right, it's a Friday before Monday Night Football comes to Las Vegas as the Raiders play their first ever regular season home game here in Las Vegas. And Q Myers, my co-host, joins me now. And Q, we got a packed show today. We're going to have to double up on our Dr. Jen's nutrition, Dr. Jen's ultimate protein bars, man.
Hey, man, I'm ready to go. I'm fired up. I've been fired up all day. I'm ready to rock and roll, man. So I got my Dr. Jen's in earlier. You mentioned that we have a packed show. So I put the mocha chocolate crisp in my belly today. So it's going down.
Good, man. I went back to my regular. I went back to my
banana in the tailpipe.
My banana in the tailpipe, and then I'm gonna do chocolate in the second hour, man. I'm ready.
You must not have too many of them bananas left, man. You better treat them like gold.
I hid the boxes, man. I hid the boxes. So,
but there you go. Smart,
let's
man.
Let's tell the folks what's on the show, because this is the hour you do not want to leave your radio, your phone, however you're listening to us. Do not go anywhere, because this hour is going to fly by. We have an all-star cast of guests coming up. First, in just a minute here, we're going to have Catherine Terrell, who we talked to several weeks ago from the Athletic New Orleans. We're going to get the latest on the Saints from her. Catherine is awesome, and she's been doing radio all over Las Vegas, I think, this morning, too. But she snuck us in, and I appreciate that. So we're going to talk to her. Bottom of the hour, Lewis Riddick. Analyst ESPN's yes. Monday Night Football will be with us. Lewis will talk to us about the game coming to Las Vegas. And, of course, he is a Raider. He played his last season in 98, with the Raiders. So we'll talk to Lewis. Then at the quarter hour, Mo Moten for his usual segment. Mo writes for Bleacher Report. He's also a senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com. Then top of next hour, it doesn't stop, it goes on, Omar Ruiz, who's here in Las Vegas covering the big game on Monday, will be with us too. He actually, Omar, covered the whole move three and a half years. So
that's my homeboy.
Yeah, he is, huh?
Yeah, we go back like the Commodores, man.
All right.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
That's my guy.
That's good.
After the Super Bowl, just which one? The one that was in Atlanta. So it was the Patriots and the Rams. Mm-hmm. We went back to the NFL Players Hotel after the game, and we were able to hang out for a long time. We shut that place down, man. It was nice. About 4 a.m. in the morning. And finally, I left the hotel to get back to my Airbnb that was happened to be in Bankhead,
wow,
which is not the place you want to stay.
No.
But that's where I was staying. So
well,
there you go.
It's good that you guys had your avocado smoothies together. I'm proud of you.
No, none of those.
We are not going to waste any time. We're going right to the phones, and we're going to bring on our first guest. Catherine Terrell covers the Saints for the Athletic in New Orleans. And Catherine, thanks again for being with us here on the Silver and Black Today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, of course, the question everybody's asking you first, right? Michael Thomas. We heard that the Saints were like, well, he might have an opportunity to play. And then today, of course, during player availability, we heard Jared Cook say twice that he wasn't going to play this week. Where does it stand right now as you hear from your sources there in New Orleans?
I don't think he's going to play. I think that report very early this morning was just someone trying to create some doubt that, you know, maybe he will play. But, I mean, stranger things have happened. Jimmy Graham played a few years back despite being supposedly out for two games. So, you know, maybe a slim chance, but I doubt it. He hasn't practiced. We're getting towards the end of the week. I think they're going to sit him this week.
With Michael Thomas most likely being out, like you just mentioned, how big is it that they were able to pick up Emmanuel Sanders in the offseason and he can kind of do some of the heavy lifting along with Jared Cook?
Well, I think it's huge. I think it might end up being as big of an acquisition as Teddy Bridgewater proved to be last year when he had to replace Drew Brees. The Saints have needed a number two receiver for a long time. And now they have a guy that's more than capable of filling in for Michael Thomas, a guy that ran all over them just last season. So I think that's going to be, it's going to prove to be a very timely signing. And I'm kind of interested to see what they're going to do without Thomas and kind of how much they do focus on Sanders.
Catherine Terrell's with us from the Athletic in New Orleans. Catherine, I think the difference with, I mean, the injury with Michael Thomas, had this happened last year, it would have been a whole different story. They had the Saints had injuries all over the field. They seem to be in a little better spot than they were last year if this would have happened. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just having Sanders and then Kamara healthy, Cook and Breeze both healthy, because Breeze was hurt around this time last year. So just all around offensively, they're in a very good spot. And then their rookie, Cesar Ruiz, is back. I don't know how much he's going to play this week, having only practiced twice since the middle of training camp. But all around, I think they have a lot of depth, and they're in a very good spot to overcome this, even though Thomas does make up a huge part of their offense.
Sticking with the offense, and this is a conversation that we have quite a bit when we talk about the Saints. We start talking about Taysom Hill, and we know that his numbers aren't just like jumping off the stat sheet where it just shows how much of a monster he is. But how much does he contribute? Like, how big of a part is he to that offense for Sean Payton?
Well, I think that, you know, I know Taysom hasn't thrown that many passes, but I think defenses have to account for what he can do. And maybe that's why they went with that trick play at the end of the Bucs-Saints games last week, just to kind of remind defenses, hey, this guy can pass the ball too. I mean, Kamara actually ended up being like wide open on that play. So I'm interested to see if they actually use Taysom Hill more on offense like they say they've been intending to. I think they did lessen his special teams role a little bit, like they said they would after he signed his new contract. But, hey, I mean, he does provide something special that really can't – I don't even know how to say it. I mean, not every player has that quality he has. When he comes on the field, he has the ability to be a game changer, and everyone saw that against the Vikings last year, and then he made some nice plays last week. So, who knows? Maybe they'll try to throw some trickery in again this week.
Catherine, when we spoke with you a few weeks ago to kind of preview during camp, you had mentioned, you know, we talked about Drew Brees, and we said, listen, at his age, of course, skills decline a bit. Does not mean that he's still not a very good NFL quarterback. But last week, of course, you know, people overreact week one in the NFL. It happens every year. But now he comes into game two, a big game here against the Raiders on Monday Night Football, without his top receiver. Are the Saints going to get a true idea of where Drew Brees is this year after this game, or you think it's going to take a few more weeks?
I think that's going to take a while. I don't think you could get a true assessment now that Michael Thomas isn't in there. I mean, Brees used to kind of make a regular habit, though, of spreading the ball around and throwing touchdown passes to guys you'd never even heard of. Having someone like Thomas that the offense is so focused on is actually really kind of relatively new for the Saints. I mean, they've had a few stars over the years, but none that controlled the offense so much like Thomas did. I mean, he was accountable for 40% of their offensive yards last year, or almost 40%, which is just crazy. So I would probably give Brees a break for the next few weeks if Thomas isn't in. But, I mean, you do want to see if week one ends up being a pattern. I thought when I went back and watched the game again that Brees didn't look as bad as I initially thought. And he does still have the ability to throw the deep ball, but it's definitely something to watch, especially as kind of the weeks go on and people start getting a little fatigued with, you know, just the grind of the season.
Looking at the defensive side of the ball, what is it that Dennis Allen has done that has really helped the Saints step up their defense? I know they got some new weapons on the secondary, Jackrabbit, Janoris Jenkins, and then you got Malcolm Jenkins. He returned. He's on the back end. But what is it that Dennis Allen does that makes that Saints defense so good?
Well, I just think the ability to be flexible. Really, they've kind of embraced the trend of positionless players this year. And what's interesting is they play in more nickel than seemingly they ever have. I think that when they only had three linebackers on the field for three snaps last week, which is really interesting because I wouldn't have expected that playing against Tampa with the way their front seven is. So So, I mean, really, he just has the ability to move guys around. And you see safety C.J. Gardner-Johnson has become mainly their main nickelback. And then D.J. Swearinger was in there a lot when they were in dime and things like that. So, I mean, he's really done a good job of kind of playing to each player's strength.
Catherine Terrell from The Athletic in New Orleans. And Catherine, are you gonna be out at the game? Are you coming?
I will be at the game, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be great. We'll look forward to meeting you there. But also, you know, coming out, the Saints, I'm sure, you know, look, they're a veteran team, but at the same time, you're coming into a brand new stadium. No fans, yes, but still, you want to come in and spoil that moment if you're the Saints for the Raiders. How have the players been talking about coming to Vegas? I mean, they're the first team to come to Vegas as a road team. I know Coach Payton answered a question about staying in casinos, which was sort of funny because they're kind of on lockdown anyway. But what's the overall mood with the organization coming to Las Vegas for the first time?
I think it's just typical players kind of downplaying the whole thing. I mean, it seems like the most they've talked about actual travel-wise is that Cam Jordan said he's going to get really antsy having to wait in the hotel all day until Monday night instead of being able to go out and kind of wander around and work off some of his nervous energy. I mean, so they have been asked questions about the new stadium, but it's just, you know, you kind of get players speaking responsible. But Jared Cook does seem pretty excited about it. So I think it's just different, just knowing that some of them will have family and friends there, but they're not allowed to come watch. And it's just odd. It's an odd way to open up this amazing new stadium. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but it is strange that they'll have to kick this thing off with no fans. I still can't wrap my mind around it.
Yeah, there's a lot of Raider fans from Southern and Northern California who are coming to Las Vegas anyway, and the bars are officially opening. We're finally reopening the bars at midnight on Monday, so just in time. So it'll be a little crazier on the Strip, so you'll get a little bit of the flavor. Catherine.
Convenient timing.
Exactly. Imagine that. The governor knows how to improve his ratings, right? Catherine Terrell from The Athletic, we'll see you out at the game. Thanks so much for being with us again today.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, Catherine Terrell and Q, some good insight there from Catherine, and of course the Raiders facing the Saints without Michael Thomas, but the Raiders too. Q, we got the latest injury report. Not much change there. A new addition though, in LaMarcus Joyner did not play in practice, but it was not injury related. Somebody had reported that it was, but it is not. And then also, nothing has changed with Henry Ruggs or with Nick Kwiatkowski. Although today, Paul Gunther, Q, I don't know if you heard this, said that Nick Kwiatkowski looked really, really good. So I don't know if that means he's on track to play Monday or if it just means it's not a big serious injury. He did not expand on that.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. It really is. I mean, one of the biggest factors or one of the biggest players going up against the Raiders could just be injury. You know, they had a lot of injuries hit them week one against the Panthers, and that could derail a season quick, fast, in a hurry. I mean, look at the Saints. That one of their big-time players went down. But I'm keeping an eye on Trent Brown and Henry Ruggs, man. Those are my guys that I'm really focused in on to see what's going to happen with them Monday night.
Yeah, it's the Ruggs is interesting because I just don't understand. Well, we just haven't gotten any details, so we'll have to wait it out and see. I will be at practice tomorrow, so we'll check out. If he's out there tomorrow, that'll be a good sign. John Simpson, too, the rookie guard, listed with a shoulder injury, and he was limited in practice on Friday too. So another lineman. I know it's not a starting lineman, but still, they're having people drop. All right, we're gonna step aside. We have such a busy hour. We'll get to your calls top of the second hour or thereabouts. But we're gonna take a quick break here, and then we come back. Q and I will review a little more of the day's news. And at the bottom of the hour, Lewis Riddick. That's right, the NFL analyst on Monday Night Football, who I contend eventually will be a GM somewhere when he wants to be. He's probably going to have a lot of fun first doing TV, making a lot of money. That'll be good. But he is a really smart guy. Of course, he is a Raider, once a Raider, always a Raider. So we'll talk to Riddick about Monday Night Football, the game, the experience of coming to Las Vegas, what it means for the NFL. You're listening to Q and Scott here on the Silver and Black today, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys, only on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
go, man. It's Friday. Let's fire up.
Yeah.
Fire up one time. Well, you're lucky I'm not there in studio.
Why is that? You slapped me in the head?
Because I would look, man, I'm a different animal when I'm in studio. Right now, I'm kind of calm and relaxed because I'm at the house.
Yeah.
But if I was in studio, I'd wreck shop, man.
You'd be
That's who I am.
You'd be dancing on the console or what?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I just, like I said, I get a little loose, man. I get loose and I wreck shop. That's what I do.
I love that about you. You're back on the Silver and Black today.
Crazy.
Back on the Silver and Black today, powered by Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys. Visit them at salmonash.com. By the way, Q, just a couple things. One is the latest line on the Raider game. Raiders are 6-point underdogs, so that hasn't changed. But the under-over, so the number has gone down. It's at William Hill now at 49.
Okay.
So they're expecting and that makes sense with the news about Brown, with the news about Thomas. It's like, you know, they're thinking some offensive issues there. So from that perspective, you're up to date on your lines. But I have to tell you, so Salmon Ash, our sponsors here, they are our what we call title sponsor of the show. And I had dinner with Sam last night. Right?
I saw that.
Yeah, he's a good friend.
You guys are whining and dining, man. Looked like you were at the fancy of the fancy.
Yeah, we were at a nice place, and we were having some libations. It was no Paul Masson and Pepsi, but it was good. So we're there, and we just start talking, you know, about stuff, and we're both dads, just like you are. And so I got to get your opinion on this, right? Which is, my kids were having some issues with kids at school because my kids are back in school a couple days a week because my wife works there and staff kids are back on a limited basis. And these kids are sort of like picking on bullying my kids, right?
Okay.
So Sam's like, well, what do you tell your kids? And I say, you know what I tell my kids is, I tell them, look, if someone's bothering you, whatever, you let your teacher know, you tell them to get away from you. But if they ever physically touch you, you have my permission to whoop ass, right?
Yeah, because, punch them in the mouth.
Exactly. Because to me, you know, a lot of school, oh, no, you can't physically touch anybody. But the moment somebody touches my child, they have the, and I tell them this, you have permission. If someone's going to physically hurt you, you have permission to cut that off at the pass, right?
And
you'll never get home in trouble. And I was just interested to hear what you if that's what you told your sons as well, because there's a lot of parents who will tell their kids not to physically engage with anybody ever, and I just don't believe that. If somebody's gonna touch you in any way, you have the opportunity, and I tell them to do it. So anyway, we were talking about that. So and that's what I teach my kids. I don't know what people are doing today, but.
You got to tell them to defend themselves.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
There's no reason not to. You know, if that's how you stop a bully, is making them realize that you're not going to be scared of them and you're going to push back. And when you push back, they'll move on to someone else.
Yes, that's right. That's how we learned it too, man, right? It was like
you just
had to punch them in the nose and then they left you alone. But speaking of punching in the nose, you're going to have a game out at Allegiant Stadium. Things are heating up. The bars are opening up. I'm seeing a lot of activity now. Parties that were maybe on hold and people had graphics ready to go and all this stuff. So Raider Nation will be coming to Las Vegas in force. And that's going to be fun. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, Q. And it'll be, I think, something to behold. The Thunderbirds, it is announced, are going to fly over Allegiant Stadium at 5:15 p.m. right on TV.
Nice.
Yeah, right on TV. So you're going to have that. And I also know that there are fireworks and all sorts of things that are going to be happening at halftime when the Killers come on stage and do their show from across the street at Caesar's Palace. So we're going to go on the phone. We're going to take a call here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Don't forget Lewis Riddick, who is the analyst. Oh, El Paso Raider hung up on us, man. He must maybe cross.
Oh, he had to get back into work.
Yeah, or he crossed the border.
When the boss calls.
Lost the signal. But yeah, so Lewis Riddick will be with us at the bottom of the hour,
nice.
And he'll talk about Monday Night Football. And I like that crew. I have him and Greasy together too. They all three sound really good.
Well, yeah, and honestly, I mean, it all goes back to Riddick for me because he's the guy who explains everything. You know, I mean, you got one guy who's doing the play-by-play, but you're watching TV, so, you know, that's kind of limited. But when it comes to Riddick, man, he breaks it down so well and really kind of puts you in the helmet, you know, and kind of lets you know what the word from the sidelines coming in and what, you know, what you should be seeing on this play and what you should be doing, more importantly, on this play. He really breaks it down well. He's a very smart football mind, man.
He is, and I enjoy watching watching him a lot and having him on Monday Night Football. And he does a lot over there, too. He does all kinds of stuff on Countdown, and he's everywhere. Yeah. So we'll get some time with him and as he's on his way to Las Vegas getting prepped for the game. And so much goes into those. For those of you who have not been to a Monday Night Football game, the amount of effort and production that goes in, like the trucks and all that stuff for TV are out here now, and they are getting ready for the big game. All right, we have El Paso Raider. We got him paroled from his work responsibility so that he can call us. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, Scott? What's up, Q, man? Sorry, fellas. I lost the call here for a second.
That's all right, man.
I'm just calling for on behalf of El Paso, you know, just to let you guys know there's a big Raider Nation fan base here, huge. I mean, we got to compete with the Cowboy fans here, but other than that, there's a pretty big fan base, and, you know, kind of bums me out that we can't be there this year. You know, in Vegas, it would have been fun, but I usually go to at least two games when they were in Oakland. But, you know, it's okay. We'll wait till next year, but we're excited and can't wait for Monday night, man. I got a feeling that it's going to be a good game, and I got a feeling that we're going to win 37-30, man, with the last minute field goal.
So you're saying 67 points, even though the odds makers here in Las Vegas have it set at 49, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll see. There you go. So nice. I'm gonna bet the over based on your recommendation.
Let me ask him real quick. Hey, how long does it take you to get from El Paso to Vegas?
Roughly, if we go through, we can go through Phoenix, cut through Kings, man. We can roughly do about 10 hours.
10 hours.
Okay.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. I mean, going to Oakland I had to take a flight, but if it was driving, it was about 19.
Yeah, that's a long one. That's a long
one. It's 15 hours from where I'm at.
Now, okay. El Paso Raider, are the Raider fans down there getting together and watching the game somewhere?
Of course. Fortunately, it'll be just me, my brother, and my pops. We're huge Raider fans. My cousin will come down as well, but we're going to be cooking. I'm going to be smoking some ribs, getting ready for the game. Nice. But we usually do. We usually either get together at there's a bar here called the Five Pints, where it's nothing but Raider fans. That's where we go to.
You know what you got to do is you guys got to get a gat when you can open up and you have a gathering down there. You got to bring Q down there. You have Q live. He'll do an appearance.
Real story. I might be in El Paso anyway. Oh. Little Q has a scholarship offer to go to UTEP to play basketball. Yeah, look out for the minors, brother.
I tell you what, man, UTEP is a really good conference, really good school for basketball. Great school.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great school for basketball.
And what?
And when you're down here, Q, we'll show you how it is. We'll show you how we get down here in the 915.
All right. That's awesome. El Paso Raider. That's cool. All right, but go back out. We can take one more call before we get to Lewis Riddick, and that's going to be Saul. Saul, you're on with Scott and Q on Silver and Black today.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Chilling.
Nah, just calling in. I'm excited for the game. You know, I'm in touch with a few booster clubs out here in Vegas, and I heard a lot of people from L.A., Arizona, and even some people from NorCal are coming up. There's going to be a lot of Raider people in town. The question was, I don't know if you've heard, but a lot of people are saying they're going to try to tear it at the Raider Stadium. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's closed, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. They're going to close off that whole area and the parking lots adjacent to. There'll be a police line around the whole thing. You're not even going to be able to get close. Although we had a call from some guy who had a construction hookup. He said he was going to get into the north lot. Look, I just don't think it's going to happen. I'm not telling people not to do what they want to do. I'm just saying don't be disappointed if you go down there because it's the first event. You have the COVID restrictions. The NFL is very, very strict. They do not want the public, at least in areas where it's still prohibited, they do not want the public near personnel from the team and all that. So they're trying to limit the numbers. And I know it seems like crazy. Well, you're tailgating. How are you close? But they're not. That's why they're not letting people, because there wasn't going to be a formal tailgate lot by the stadium anyway, other than the field tray area where they were going to do the big party area. So we'll see, though. We'll see how close people can get. But it should be interesting. Yeah, there's a ton of people coming up, Q. And let's expect, like, Raider fans are not going to sit at home and not be in Las Vegas for the first ever game of the Las Vegas Raiders. It just wasn't going to happen.
Nah. it's Vegas. So everyone just wants to flock and head to Vegas anyway, regardless of where you're at. They just want to be in that proximity. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, regulations, and there's going to be a lot of areas that are going to be shut down. But Raider fans are Raider fans, and they're going to find a way to have a good time in Las Vegas regardless. So we'll see how it shakes out. We'll see where our construction guy, where he ends up getting his tailgate on. But, yeah, I guarantee that fans are going to be fans, and they're going to find a way to have a good time.
All right. Well, our next guest is a Raider Nation favorite, the on-air television analyst on Monday Night Football in the booth, who ended his NFL career in the silver and black, back in 1998. Lewis Riddick now joins us. Now, Lewis, how excited are you to do this game, the first ever regular season game at the new Allegiant Stadium in the NFL's newest market?
Yeah, this is as good as it gets. You know, I mean, everyone knows very well, or should know, and if they don't, they will know now, that my time, you know, in Oakland is some of the most cherished time that I ever spent in the NFL. It was special to wear the silver and black, just like it is for just about anybody who played for that organization, whether it was Oakland, L.A., or now going to be here in Vegas, to help this game with Brian Griese and Steve Levy in this what looks like just out of this world fantastic new stadium is a dream come true. It's a historic night for Monday Night Football in terms of our history. And so it doesn't get any bigger than that. It's going to be on all the networks, ABC, ESPN, ESPN2. It'll be a lot of eyeballs watching. It's a great event, man. It's a great event. I'm already here in Vegas. I can't wait till Monday night. It seems like it's forever and a day away. And I'm just hoping that it goes quick.
Lewis, you've been on records multiple times of saying that it's just different when you're a Raider, and it's special when you're a Raider. What does it mean to put on the silver and black, put that helmet on, and come out of that tunnel and be a Raider?
Yeah, man. Look, I mean, this goes way back, okay? Way back before me, you know, the tradition, the commitment to excellence that, you know, that Mr. Davis used to always talk about and became the Raiders' mantra. This goes back to the days of Ted Hendricks, Kenny Stabler, Cliff Branch, Matt Millen, Lester Hayes, Mike Haynes, Mike Davis, all of these guys, Van McElroy. I mean, these are all guys who, as a kid, I grew up watching, okay? And you could just tell that there was a familial atmosphere within that organization and on those teams that was different. It was special. It had a little bit of a bad boy edge to it, which I liked, which I was drawn to, because I think football players are naturally aggressive, and they kind of like a little bit of that outlaw, us against the world type of persona. And that's something that the Raiders embraced, and they were successful. And so growing up, I was always like, man, and plus, okay, on top of it, the silver and black, I mean, that's just about as good as it gets as far as the way it looks when you put it on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I played against the Raiders, let me see, once when I was drafted in San Francisco in 1991, we played the Raiders in the preseason game down in L.A., and I remember that was Ronnie Lott's first year in L.A. So I just remember looking across the field and seeing number 42 and seeing Lott in that jersey, in the Raider jersey, and I'm just thinking, man, and I remember seeing Howie Long, who I talk to now every now and then, so I just remember thinking, it'd be cool to wear that jersey at some point in time. So when I wound up playing there, I remember the first game at the Coliseum, coming out for pregame, and you hear the autumn wind song start playing, and the Raiderettes are there, and you run down towards the black hole, down in the end zone, and then come out underneath the goalpost. I just remember getting goosebumps and thinking, holy, you know, I mean, I'm a Raider now. I'm a Raider. And so it just kind of, it fed into the way I like to play the game. You know, guys like Lott, and guys like Jack Tatum, and Mr. Atkinson, and Mike Davis, and those guys. I got to see Lester last year when I was in Oakland. I mean, those are the guys. I mean, as a defensive back, I liked everything that they embodied as football players. I totally bought into all of it. And so when I played out there, I mean, I gave it my all. I tried to knock everybody silly, everyone. I just tried to play in that image. And I think, well, just kind of fast forward into Monday night, you guys got one now in your secondary, number 24, Jonathan Abram, who plays just like that. And I'm sure Mr. Davis is looking down at him going, that's what I want on my football team right there.
Well,
that kid could play in any era.
Yeah, and Lewis, it's funny because that was the first question I was going to ask you about. Again, we're speaking to Lewis Riddick, the analyst for ESPN's Monday Night Football. And you talked about Jonathan Abram a couple days ago, and you spent a lot of time in the front office. You were a scout. You did player personnel stuff. He has the skill and ability. Everybody knows that. But there's that piece of him, that intangible, and you being a defensive back know better than anybody. Talk why he looks so special, even though he's played five quarters of football.
Well, because he plays at a speed, both mentally and physically, that is well beyond his years and stands out amongst his peers. Okay, when Jonathan sees it, and he sees it quickly in terms of play recognition, he is gone. And it is a flash. And quite honestly, with the new player speed tracking technology that we have in the NFL, he's one of the fastest players, literally, in terms of speed and the rate at which he covers ground in the NFL. It's already been documented just this past week. So when you see that, and then when he arrives at the point of attack, it is, it's destruction that's happening with this guy. Just ask Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey will remember number 24 from the Raiders all year long, because he put some hits on that young man that just don't see. Look, there's only a few guys in the secondary who do that now. Mm-hmm. Him and Jamal Adams right now kind of play the same way. They both play just like, it's just fury. It's fury for as long as I'm out there. It's just, you better buckle up. You better put a mouthpiece in, because it's fury like for 3 hours. And that, to me, that makes me giddy. I'm sure I'm going to have some unique perspective in the booth on Monday night, because he's just going to bring it. And he's going up against a football team in the Saints and a quarterback in Drew Brees. But also, look, they're one of the standards. Sean Payton, Drew Brees, that combination is the standard in the NFL in terms of being able to take advantage of your weaknesses and trying to stay away from your strengths. And the Raiders got their work cut out for them. Michael Thomas or not, they got their work cut out for them trying to slow down this offense. And what would be better than to see Jonathan Abram square up against a guy like Alvin Kamara or Taysom Hill or Latavius Murray, and just see one of those good old-fashioned pad-to-pad knockers, where in that stadium it's going to resonate throughout the entire stadium. That's just what it's all about. You can hear it in my voice. I wish we were playing this game tonight, because that kid is fun to watch. I just hope he stays healthy, man, because he plays in the image of the old schoolers. And if Lester's watching this game, which I'm sure he will be, if Ronnie watches this game, from out there in the Bay Area, which I'm sure he will, these guys will go, I would have liked to have played with that kid. No question
Lewis,
about it.
We always love your player evaluation. You're always break these guys down. He's coming out of college really, really well. John Gruden, he tore down the roster in 2018 when he made the return to the sideline. What have you seen as far as talent evaluation and the growth on the roster of the Raiders?
Well, I think over the past 2 years, what they've tried to do is two things. One, get younger. Two, get faster. They got younger last year. They're trying to get faster this year. Okay? They're really trying to get much faster, particularly on offense. Despite how efficient they were on offense last year, especially Derek, as far as his yards per attempt, completion percentage, it wasn't a very explosive down-the-field offense that could really strike you like the Kansas City Chiefs can. Okay, let's just use them as an example. And I think the reason why was because, look, really, Darren Waller and Josh Jacobs were their guys. That was it. Hunter Renfrow was a nice addition, but those were their two guys. They need some people on the outside that can really get going. And obviously this year with Henry and Brian, those are two young cats that can really get it going on the outside. So I think that's what you met. There was a conscious effort on their part to do that. And you see how they're using Henry after 1 week. I'm going to make this point, but just remember this. Remember how Andy Reid uses Tyreek Hill in Kansas City and where he puts him, and how he strategically tries to match him up against certain aspects of the opponent's defense. John's doing the exact same thing. And if you watch the tape, you'll see why. I'm going to point it out Monday, because I guarantee it's going to happen. On defense, same thing is going on. They're trying to get more speed for Paul Gunther. They needed more speed at linebacker. They went out, spent the money. They were one of the least invested teams from a cap dollar perspective in 2018 and 19 on defense. They tried to change that this year. They spent more money on the second level. They brought Malik Collins in. They get John back. Trayvon Mullen's on the corner now. So they've got more speed in youth. Now it's Can we get them all on the same page, keep them healthy, get them to execute? Because their division is getting tougher. The Broncos are better. The Chiefs, you know they're going to be one of the top two teams in the league. The Chargers, if they can ever figure out what's going on at quarterback and stay healthy, they'll be competitors too. So the Raiders got to keep pace. Let's see what happens.
Lewis Riddick from ESPN's Monday Night Football, amongst other things. He's a busy guy over at ESPN. And, Lewis, we look at this game. You mentioned earlier, Saints without Michael Thomas. The Raiders may be without Trent Brown, their big right tackle, and Nick Kwiatkowski, their linebacker. What are the Raiders going to have to do? I mean, Drew Brees, I don't care if it's a diminished Drew Brees. He's still Drew Brees. What are they going to have to do to stay in this game and have a chance to win their first home game in Las Vegas?
Well, I think one of the first things you have to do with Drew is, look, they're one of the most efficient first down passing teams in the NFL. And once they get you going that way, once they loosen you up because they say, hey, we're not just going to run it, we're going to throw it for you on first down, and we're going to have put together a string of successful plays to where it's just easy for us to manage first down, first downs. And then we can run Latavius Murray down your throat. We can throw Alvin out there and move him all over the place. And then when we get in the red area, we're the best team in the NFL because how good Kamara is, how good Michael Thomas was. Now he's not going to be there. But we're just good. We're good at picking you apart because we have one of the best passers in history. We have one of the best play callers in history. That passer and that play caller have been together forever. So you better be on top of it defensively as far as being able to handle the pace that they go at, all the different personnel groupings they use. And you better not just sit back and play some kind of conservative zone coverage and act like you're a fan and just watching Drew Brees, because he'll just pick you apart. So they're going to have to be smart. They're going to have to be composed because of all the personnel groupings. And then when the ball's thrown, they're going to have to hit, tackle, get off the field, give their offense a chance to then execute against what is a pretty good defense on New Orleans' part. Now, I know that sounds simplistic, but in many ways football is. There's only so many things you can do. It's just whether or not you can do them. The Saints operate at a very, very high tempo because there's so much familiarity amongst their offensive players. And the Raiders are going to have to be able to match their tempo and match their brain power and their football intellect. Because if you don't, you stay too basic. Sean is just like, it'll be like a professor going against, you know, first-year freshman chemistry student. It just won't be fair. So you're going to have to play the physical and the mental game to beat this team.
Lewis, why is Cam Jordan not talked about nationally enough? At least in my opinion, he's not.
Yeah, you know, he's just not. He's not the explosive, dynamic edge guy like, let's just say, like, you know, like Bond is, or like guys, like, he's not the freak athlete like Myles Garrett is in Cleveland. He's not the dominant interior guy who is just making people look silly like Aaron Donald does. He's just steady as hell. And he's constantly double-digit sacks, plays up and down the line of scrimmage. The defense hasn't really ever gotten a lot of attention in New Orleans, although statistically last year they were very, very strong down the stretch. But he's good. Look, people in football know he's real good. Just that people don't. When people talk about the Saints, when the media talks about the Saints, they talk about Drew. They talk about Michael. They talk about Alvin. They talk about Sean. They don't really talk about the defense. And they get, look. How do you figure it like this? DeMario Davis is one of the best linebackers in the NFL. Period. Yep. How many people in the mainstream know who DeMario Davis is?
Exactly.
Right.
Not very many. And he's an All Pro. He's a first team All Pro. And people go, DeMario, who's that? He played, is that Dale Davis? Did he play for the Pacers? Is that basketball? What are you talking about? This guy's an All Pro. You just don't talk about that side of the ball, but they've got some ballers, man.
They do. Lewis, before we let you go, give us your thoughts on a young man who I've been impressed with both on and off the field, and that's Josh Jacobs.
His story is fantastic. Everybody knows it. I mean, the kind of resilience, fortitude that this kid has shown in his life is just off the freaking charts. He is, pound for pound, one of the toughest players in the league. He's a complete running back. Run inside, run outside. I mean, I'm going to feature him, too, on Monday Night. I'm kind of telling you guys what we're going to do from the TV standpoint. I mean, he is just – he put some hits on people as a runner last week that were just – I'll have you making business decisions real quick in terms of, do you want to tackle this kid for four quarters? They need to get him more, even more incorporated in the passing game, and it seems like after week one, they're trying to do that because he has that kind of capability too. I mean, he's just one of, he's one of the best. He's right up there with the best runners in the league as far as how they count on him. He is as big a part of their offense as any running back is a part of their respective offenses in the league. We've gotten him a home run drafting him. They just need to, they just needed some help on the outside to help loosen things up for him.
Yeah.
So he can be even better, and so far so good.
All right. Well, Lewis Riddick from ESPN's Monday Night Football, and good luck to you, Steve, and Brian at the new Allegiant Stadium. Of course, you know they call it the Death Star. It's going to be fun, and we look forward to seeing you guys out there and watching you all season long. Hopefully we can visit with you later in the season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to it.
All right. That's Lewis Riddick here on the Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio. Q.
Great stuff.
Great, great stuff. And we appreciate him taking the time, which is, of course, a busy part of the week as they get close and have production meetings and all sorts of things going on as the game rolls in. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mo Moten will join us for his weekly segment. Then we move into hour number two, where Omar Ruiz from the NFL Network, who's actually been in town doing some stories. I saw him out when I was doing my COVID test out at the Raiders facility. We'll see what he's up to and what they're working on for the game on Monday night. You're listening to the Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
All right, welcome back, Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio. We keep rolling on. Thanks again, Lewis Riddick, for being with us. Look forward to watching him, at least in the with no sound on, maybe at the game on Monday. But but he's awesome, man. I love Lewis. And by the way, I didn't get a chance to talk to him about it because we wanted to be respectful of his time. But he is one of the best dressers on television. No doubt. No
yeah,
doubt.
He's all right.
He knows what he's doing. All right, we are back to Raider Talk, and we're rolling through our third guest of the hour because Q and I don't know other way but to just go and grind and keep moving. So we bring on for our weekly segment with the senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com, also a major contributor for the NFL over on Bleacher Report. That is one Mr. Maurice, or as we call him, Mo Moten. And Mo, happy Friday, my man. You ready for some football?
Definitely ready. You know, it's a coincidence. I'm always eating before I get on with you guys. I don't know what it is, but I feel like I got to stuff my face before I get on with you.
Well, but you're also 3 hours ahead of us because you run the New York City office of the Silver and Black today, and so it's dinner time, right? But talking about feasting, right? The Raiders are going to be looking at a New Orleans offense that is going to be without its top player, but still has a lot of weapons. And you wrote up on silverandblacktoday.com this week about the defensive speed of the Raiders and the versatility they have and how that will help this year a lot more than in previous years because they just didn't have that. Talk a little bit about how the Raiders' defense can look at what tools the Saints do have and how they can neutralize them.
Well, as we know, they're going to probably be without Michael Thomas. So I think the offense is going to run through Jared Cook and Alvin Kamara. And what do you need to defend those guys? You need athletic linebackers. You need a safety who's active. And we saw that in the first week against the Panthers. Jonathan Abram immediately jumped off the screens all over the field. He stuck Christian McCaffrey for a tackle for a loss. Corey Lewis is out there to cover tight ends. I think he'll be able to do that. I know Raider Nation is pretty worried about Kwiatkowski being out there. I get it. Raekwon McMillan could step in and be a thumper. But Corey Lewis is going to be very important in shadowing Jared Cook, and I think he can get the job done. I will add one other aspect. You had Catherine Terrell on earlier today. She wrote a piece, and she said her colleague Larry Holder counted 3 blown blocks from Andrew Speed, who's a guard, and their rookie first-round guard, Cesar Ruiz, missed the first game last week. He practiced in full today, so he could play. That would be his first game. This is a chance for Malik Collins and Mo Hurst to eat. So look out for those two guys taking advantage of inexperience and maybe some blown blocks on the front line.
Mo, when we were talking to Lewis, you know, he was really excited and fired up about what he saw from Jonathan Abram week one. And I was too, as he went out there and played a heck of a game. But how impressed were you by the way he played? He was able to fly around. He was able to, you know, go ahead and hit Christian McCaffrey early and hit him often, but he didn't draw any penalties. How huge was that, that he was able to play his style of game without getting a 15-yarder?
Controlled aggression. That's what I call it. And you have to have that from your safety. He's going to set the tone. Some Raider fans are still a little nervous because he's still a missile out there. You don't want to blot another shoulder. But I think this is good for the Raiders defense. Again, flying all over the field, making tackles, not drawing any penalties. He's able to wrap up. You want to see it consistently for the whole team. But I think having him out there changes that defense. I think you'll see that change continue in the second week of the season. Again, he's going to be very important in tracking down Alvin Kamara when he catches out of the backfield. If Jared Cook goes deep, I think he can take that because he played a lot of free safety last week. He can take that assignment in coverage as well.
Again, we're talking to Mo Moten, senior NFL columnist for Silver and Black Today, contributor over at Bleacher Report as well. And Mo, we talk about that Littleton role at linebacker and watching the game film of him last week. And that's what I was actually personally most excited about, was watching him and seeing that athletic linebacking play with the speed sideline to sideline. He did not disappoint. And I think that for Raider fans, a lot of times they're not necessarily plays that are going to be highlight reel plays, but the core of what Corey Littleton does is so important against an opponent like New Orleans because of how Drew Brees looks and is able to go through his progressions, correct?
Correct. And there's one other thing I want to see from Corey Littleton. I don't know if this is going to be in Gunther's bag of tricks, but he has the speed. I wonder if the Raiders are going to bring him on some blitzes to kind of force Drew Brees to throw the ball earlier, because we all know Brees knows how to get the ball out quick. And Carr talked about that. His presser, I believe, this week. And I want to see maybe some creativity with the linebacker position, because you do have speed with him. And if you're not going to have a guy covered, maybe you have Abram covered in the middle of the field and you have Littleton blitz off the edge, just to give Brees a different wrinkle, a different look on from that defense. And also, of course, generate some pass rush.
Mo, when it comes to Josh Jacobs, obviously that's how the offense really rolls. John Gruden wants to get him going early and often. The Saints defense hasn't given up a 100-yard rusher since 2017. I believe Samaje Perine was the guy who did that. With knowing that the defense is really good against the run, how will the Raiders attack that Saints defense?
I know Josh Jacobs said he's not really thinking about stats, but he has that and know that the Saints haven't given up 100-yard rushing, I believe, 44 straight games. I believe you can still try to run the ball. Don't go away from your bread and butter. Just try to force that defense to stop what you're going to do, because sometimes it's strength versus strength. Can you stop our best attack? And I think they shouldn't go away from that, but they can also mix in Josh Jacobs in the passing game, which we saw, which a lot of people talked about this week. He can catch the ball in the backfield now, so he can maybe pick on some of those linebackers. Maybe not Demario Davis, because he's an all-pro, as Lewis Riddick mentioned earlier today. But if he gets matched up against a lesser linebacker, I like to see Josh Jacobs get some passes out of the backfield, maybe shake up some things for that offense.
Mo, when we talk about the Saints, I know fans don't necessarily think about or look at opposing coaches, right? But Sean Payton, which, you know, some people don't like him because of the controversy that got his suspension for targeting, all that stuff. But Sean Payton is one of the best play callers we've seen in a long time on the sidelines in the NFL. What is it about him in this matchup with John Gruden? They have not played each other in quite some time. And these two guys who go back, and they were on the same staff for a year with the Philadelphia Eagles back earlier in both of their careers. What is it about Sean Payton that makes him such an effective play caller?
He has weapons to pick a defense apart. And again, if you give Drew Brees enough time, whether he's throwing, even though he can't throw 20 yards downfield like that anymore, give him time. He will use Drew Brees to pick any defense apart. And you got to remember, Sean Payton and Drew Brees have been connected at the hip for more than a decade. So we want to talk about continuity. They have all the continuity there. So those guys know what each other are thinking. They're on the same page. And they know what to do against defense. They'll throw different packages at you. I think Catherine Terrell mentioned this too, though. And Lewis Riddick mentioned this as well. They'll throw different packages at you just to exploit your weaknesses. And the Raiders, again, they won the game last week, but they still gave up 30 points to a Panthers offense that was pretty new. What's going to happen with an offense, a quarterback, and head coaching pair that know each other inside and out?
What are your thoughts on Arden Key, man? He showed to me that he's very fast. You know, he got off the line very quickly against the Panthers. But the same story, the same scenario at the end of the day, not able to get home. That's just my assessment. But what are you seeing from Arden Key early in the season?
He has the speed. He has the burst. But as you said, it's the same old story. He didn't record a tackle. He's just not closing the deal. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's his start or what the issue is there, but he just doesn't finish the deal and tackles or getting any pressures, and you want to see that. Now, that was a problem for the whole Raiders defense, but Arden Key, who had a strong camp, you hope to see more from him as time goes on. It's a wait-and-see approach. Let's see what he does against the Saints, because the Raiders are going to absolutely need some pressure.
Absolutely. It's going to be interesting. That defensive line has to step up their game, and Arden Key is part of that. Mo Moten, senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com, also at Bleacher Report. He's about to head into the busiest part of his week, which is the weekend, and Sunday into Monday. But Mo, I know we'll catch you also next week on the Just Pod Baby podcast, and we'll see you next week here on Silver and Black Today. Thanks, my friend.
Of course, guys. Enjoy the rest of the show. Enjoy the game. Hopefully the Raiders get a win, but again, we'll see. I think it's going to be a close one.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you. All right, we're going to step aside. Top of the hour. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by the NFL Network's Omar Ruiz. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Q and Scott here on the Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio, getting closer to Monday night. It's a